Audible for the best Bitcoin content out there. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Crypto Economy. I am Guy Swan, and we are starting off the week reading another piece by Nick Carter. There's a number of these articles that he has. Nick Carter has excellent stuff, built around a number of articles built around the idea of the settlement assurances that you get within the Bitcoin system that you cannot get anywhere else. And it's a really powerful idea, and this is a great lead in to those discussions. And this is a piece, again, by Nick Carter, titled "Transaction Count is an Inferior Measure." So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump in. It is popular to measure Bitcoin by looking at its daily transaction count, or TPS, transactions per second. New blockchains often advertise TPS rates in the millions or billions and sneer at Bitcoin's measly 3 to 4 transactions per second rate. It fluctuates between 200,000 and 350,000 transactions per day. But this is an incomplete picture. There are at least 3 important variables to consider when holistically appraising a value transfer system, and the transaction rate is just one of them. Transaction capacity, or TPS. Typical transaction characteristics, like transaction size, and settlement assurances. Together, transaction rate and average transaction size give you the economic throughput of the system, a measure of its financial bandwidth per unit of time. The settlement assurances tell you what sort of a system it is. How certain are you that you won't face a chargeback or be defrauded? Does your transaction settle immediately, like physical cash, or is there a 90-day chargeback period prior to settlement, as with most credit cards? Even though Bitcoin is virtual, it is closer to a physical settlement system than a deferred settlement system like credit cards. Bitcoins are virtual bearer instruments. If you possess the private key, which unlocks an unspent output, you are the owner of those coins and entitled to do with them whatever you like. That asset is no one's liability. In this respect, it more closely resembles physical cash or a commodity like gold. There is no recourse if you lose your coins or send them to the wrong address. Of course, recourse has its advantages in certain contexts, and the overhead for dealing with reversed transactions and fraud is exactly why credit fees exist. The cost of credit fraud and the remediation infrastructure are passed on to end users in the form of merchant fees. That's why you can't typically do a credit transaction for less than a dollar or two. So how do you consistently compare dissimilar value transfer systems like Bitcoin, PayPal, Visa, Swift, and physical cash? I'd recommend broadening your focus beyond simple transaction count. That's only one component of economic throughput. The chart below shows an idealized comparison of various value transfer systems along the axes of transaction count and typical transaction size. To simplify, payment networks consist of many small transactions, whereas settlement networks will exhibit fewer but larger transactions in dollar terms. He has a chart here just to illustrate what he's talking about, where the vertical axis is transaction count, and then the horizontal axis is the size, the amount of value being transacted. A handful of example points are put on this so that you can just see an illustration in the difference between a network with few number of transactions of incredibly high value versus one with many more transactions of very low value. And then he uses these points to block out a square where you see a surface area below these points that show or represent the economic throughput of each of these systems. What we should really be interested in is the area under each point. That's the average transaction size times the number of transactions, which gives us the value flowing through the system per unit of time. To further simplify, what you find if you aggregate data from a variety of networks is that they tend to cluster at one end or the other. I'm oversimplifying, of course, but you get the idea. Let's plug some real numbers into the idealized model. I went ahead and found data for physical cash transactions, credit debit transactions, mobile peer-to-peer payments, various popular cryptocurrencies, gold settlements, and various settlement and financial infrastructure systems like ACH, Fedwire, CHIPS, and SWIFT. The real numbers charts look like an even more exaggerated version of the L in my toy model because the systems vary on many orders of magnitude along the two axes. And he's got a chart here showing a number of different systems with Fedwire, CHIPS, over-the-counter gold, SWIFT. And what's funny is because this chart is linear and the comparison between these systems is so vast, like with both the amount of value in the transaction versus the amount of transactions, the number of transactions, that almost the entire subset of examples here are either sitting on the horizontal axis for very high value in transactions or sitting on the vertical axis of very high volume of transactions. But there's almost no measurable space underneath them in comparison because there's no middle ground. On the top left, you have physical cash and Visa credit and debit transactions, which have extremely high volume and smallish per transaction sizes. On the bottom right, you have the massive settlement networks, with the gold settlements on the London market taking the crown for per transaction size. One caveat, SWIFT is a messaging service, so value does not really flow through the system. The numbers listed for SWIFT are mostly academic in nature. Let's take the log view so that we can cram everything in there. We have the same chart again, except that the growth in transaction size and transaction count is logarithmic so that you can actually see the relationship between these systems. And now you can see a lot of the cryptocurrencies in comparison because before they were crammed so close together in the low transaction count and low average transaction size corner that they were indistinguishable from each other. This is the most comprehensive view. It demonstrates clearly that you have settlement-like networks towards the bottom right and payment-like networks on the top left. Bitcoin is edging closer and closer to the bottom right as base layer transactions encode progressively more value. Let's exclude the mega large settlement networks and focus on the payment networks. He continues to modify this chart to make to illustrate the differences between these systems a lot easier. So I highly recommend going to the link in the show notes and actually checking these out so you can get a feel for what he's demonstrating in this piece. As you can tell, most cryptocurrencies can barely lift themselves up off the x-axis. They don't have the throughput or, crucially, the adoption to work as mainstream payments networks. So what is Bitcoin for, anyway? As shown on the chart, Bitcoin transactions tend to be quite large. It's hard to know the precise number, but your average transaction will be in the thousands of dollars, possibly tens of thousands. Your median transaction is well over $100. Large transactions are partly out of necessity. Exchanges will often batch together many cash outs to investors into a single transaction to reduce the per payment overhead, which increases transaction size. And fees in the single-digit dollars mean that only larger transactions are worth it from a fees perspective. More saliently, though, the strong assurances of global final settlement that Bitcoin provides are simply not required for low-value transactions. Typical usage of the system tends to be scaled to the assurances that the system provides. You don't drive an armored personnel carrier down the street to get a packet of cigarettes. You don't need those security guarantees. You don't wear body armor when you walk to work. You don't put your petty cash in a safe and handcuff it to yourself when you buy groceries. What critics miss when they fixate on TPS is the simple fact that the users of these systems tend to have a good idea of what they want from them. Low stakes, small value transfers with some reversibility guarantees work just fine on Venmo, PayPal, or Visa. Yes, these don't work for the unbanked, but then again, virtually no financial infrastructure does. This stuff takes a long time to build, as does trust in the system. What a low bandwidth in bytes, but high bandwidth in dollars system like Bitcoin works for is large, interjurisdictional, money for enemies transactions where mutual trust is lacking and rapid settlement is desired. If mutual trust is present, or deferred settlement is acceptable, or the payment size is very small, base layer Bitcoin is not the system for you. Vanilla Bitcoin is useful for a tiny fraction of all of the payments or value transfers that happen on a given day, and that is fine. Bitcoin lives on the bottom right side of the size and frequency chart. Those three or four transactions which happen per second on Bitcoin are exactly what its users are after. That very particular, idiosyncratic use case doesn't really overlap with systems like Visa, PayPal, Alipay, or Venmo. They aren't teleologically comparable. They aren't trying to do the same thing. Is it fair to compare them? Yes, but only if you are mindful of the trade-offs made by each system. Quote, "Why can't fruit be compared?" Lil Dicky. Additionally, Bitcoin's near-immediate physical settlement opens up a large design space, allowing developers to add cheaper, more convenient payments networks with deferred settlement. This is Lightning and other second-layer solutions, cheap, near-instantaneous transfers which periodically settle to the base layer. The truth is that not all transactions merit final settlement within minutes of occurring. For these petty cash situations, you're better off using a higher layer. Bitcoin, and increasingly Ethereum too, is developing precisely with this in mind. So, in short, value transfer systems vary along at least three major axes, not just one. The response to, quote, "Our system does 500,000 transactions per second," is, at what cost? Are you deferring settlement? Do you have a single validator? Do you require that transactors be part of the U.S.-controlled financial system? In my view, economic throughput, the dollar equivalent value flowing through the system per unit of time, is a far more comprehensive view of the system than the simple message send rate, or transactions per second. Measure the area under the point, not just the Y value. From that more holistic perspective, Bitcoin is a single order of magnitude away from Visa. All right, and that was Nick Carter's piece published on his Medium blog titled "Transaction Count is an Inferior Measure." So let's take a break right here and hit our sponsor, and then I want to talk a little bit about kind of the ideas behind this and why this lays the groundwork for some pieces we'll probably get into sometime here in the future on the settlement assurances and the more specific value that Bitcoin brings to the world of money and finance. All right, so again, that was written by Nick Carter, who always has great pieces. I will link to his Twitter account so you can follow him, and link to the blog, his Medium page that this is posted on, because there's a ton of other great stuff to cover, and a number of pieces that we have covered on the show, so I will link to those as well, just so that you can go exploring if this is your first Nick Carter article. But this article in particular, I just thought was a great way to demonstrate the dichotomy between the two sorts of transaction systems that we're used to, the layered transaction systems that we have that naturally occur in the financial system. And I think it's kind of a natural organization of complexity and volume at the exact same time. I think this is that same natural expansion of complexity that you sort of see in genetic systems, like all networks essentially in some form or fashion. To show economic throughput, because transaction count, there was actually a great example. Somebody just told me the other day that they thought they were going to use some altcoin have like a really fast trade, like they were sending it to an exchange or something, and it had like 10 second or like 30 second block times or something. And I can't remember many of the details about like what they were. I believe they were trying to use Bitcoin originally, and decided to quickly trade to this altcoin in an effort to get it on the exchange sooner. Or actually, it may have been they were trying to get out of their Bitcoin Cash. Whatever, the details are kind of irrelevant. So they traded to this altcoin, thinking that they were going to basically beat the deposit window by using this quote-unquote much faster coin. But it turns out that after they immediately tried to send the deposit, that they required like 50 confirmations or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the numbers, but they were suddenly like, they hit this roadblock that the exchange didn't accept it because the trade-off of the confirmation on network number two on altcoin network was not even close to the assurances of the confirmation of the previous. And they're in a situation where the exchange needs final settlement. They need to think that this transaction is actually settled and done for the next trade to go through, for the deposit to be met, essentially, or guaranteed by the service. And it's so easy to kind of get lost in the real basic kind of elementary narrative of, well, transaction count as the most important thing, but losing the understanding of how much security there is, and the inevitability that if Bitcoin is an incredibly secure, highly secure settlement system, like final settlement, in the fact that it is like physical cash or a commodity like gold, that once that transaction happens, there is no going back, that sort of system only finds itself in certain areas of the economy. It is not, excuse me, it is not used for low-value transactions. Not only is it not necessary, but it's not desired in a lot of circumstances, because a lot of low-value transactions aren't situations where you want immediate settlement. They're transactions where the other half or the other part of the settlement that's occurring is one that is time delayed, like ordering on Amazon or something. There's a time, like I have to then wait for Amazon to fulfill the order. They get the money immediately. It would actually make more sense for money to be in a state where I can get it back, like where there's a third party escrow. There's something in the middle to prevent me from having given them all of my money while I simply wait, basically with no recourse, to in the hopes that they will fulfill their end of the agreement. So it makes less sense to use a final settlement transaction in order to do that. And then it's exactly why payment networks like Lightning is perfect for that sort of utility, because of how it locks up payments and sends transactions through through the network and how you can have an ongoing multi-signature relationship with multiple parties, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of stuff that you can utilize in a higher layer payment network that allows you to make those trade-offs and change the dynamics of the transaction to fit what you are doing with the transaction. But anything that is broadcast back to the base layer immediately has those attributes that are insanely valuable. It is immediately given a level of security that you treat nuclear launch codes. And when no matter what you do with that system, if there is a limit, if there is any sort of scarcity in the actual transactions, which there must be scarcity, I think I read on the show something very recently. I can't even remember. It might have been something that I was reading as a candidate for the show. But talking about how if there is not scarcity in transaction space, there can be no market for fees. You cannot have fees in a without limited supply. If supply is infinite, demand doesn't matter what the demand is. The price is always zero. The equilibrium price is always zero. So there must be a supply cap. But not to to even go beyond that point, though, is that the supply cap is directly tied, or I guess more indirectly tied, to the assurances that that system gives, because it's in the validation and the auditing of that system, the ability for anyone to participate essentially as a referee and, in the analogy that I've used many times in the past, to check or to assay the quality of their gold coin, in this case, their digital gold coin, Bitcoin, which is entirely reliant on the verification and auditing, that it's an indirect relationship between how many transactions you have in that system versus the assurances that it has, which means that for Bitcoin to handle incredibly high value transactions, millions, billions of dollars worth of money moving in single transactions, it will price out coffee payments. And I don't think that matters. When you look at these charts that he's got, it shows just how much the difference between the amount of value being moved and the amount of transactions moving that value, that the unbelievable dichotomy between these two extremes. When he shows the linear chart, it's just kind of laughable because it literally doesn't look like there is anything that's not, nothing is in the actual grid. Nothing is in the chart. It would be like a scatter plot where you would expect to see things, you know, all over the place. But instead, it's just settlement systems that are basically on the horizontal axis and then payment systems that are on the vertical axis. Like, these two roles could not be more diverged from each other. And they each have very specific characteristics that make them good at what they do. And Bitcoin, despite all of the misconceptions and misunderstandings and personal attachments to certain ideas, Bitcoin has all of the characteristics of an insanely secure, jurisdictionless, and global settlement system. Because why? Every transaction is final settlement. So to make the comparison for transactions per second, to try to compare this to Visa, PayPal, and credit and debit cards just as a total, and think that we're going to do this on-chain is to miss how vast the chasm is between what currently makes sense in these digital currencies and what the end goal is. Like, this is such an exponential relationship. There is no way to do this on a broadcast network, a network where everyone broadcasts every transaction to everyone else. It just doesn't make sense. It architecturally, from its design, its construction, from the very core, is antithetical to being able to pull off an enormous amount of transactions. If we had to submit every single request on the internet for connections and for packets to every single other node, if my mobile phone had to deal with your requests for Netflix streaming, then it would never, ever scale. It would never have worked with more than 1,000 different computers on the network. It would have fallen apart immediately. You must have a unicast layer to handle that sort of volume. And that's all to just ignore. That's just kind of from a basic like network architecture idea, and to ignore the fact that the assurances you get with that settlement system make no sense to do for $1 to $2 payments. And again, if there is any scarcity, those are going to get priced out because Bitcoin can secure insanely valuable transactions. Those valuable transactions are going to push the less valuable transactions out. And that's whether it's at 1 megabyte, 2 megabytes, 10 megabytes, 20 megabytes, 100 megabytes. It is always going to price out low-value transactions based on the value that Bitcoin can provide, based on the assurances that the system can give. So the only way to get all of those low-value transactions is to destroy the assurances of the system so that high-value transactions don't want to use it. And that is the opposite of a secure and independent system. We want to secure the value of the whole world by creating an internet and a set of layered networks that can handle all of that traffic based on the degree of security, the abstraction from the ultimate settlement on Bitcoin that is needed for each of those transactions. I highlighted a paragraph in this piece I just think it's just an awesome, like you can't hit this argument enough, in my opinion, and he has a lot of really great, fun little analogies in this piece, is that it says, quote, "More saliently though, the strong assurances of global final settlement that Bitcoin provides are simply not required for low-value transactions." And excerpt, in my opinion, it is often that you don't want that. But back to it, typical usage of the system tends to be scaled to the assurances that the system provides. You don't drive an armored personnel carrier down the street to get a pack of cigarettes. You do not need those security guarantees. You don't wear body armor when you walk to work. You don't put your petty cash in a safe and handcuff it to yourself whenever you buy groceries. Oops. Oh, Jesus Christ. Hey, so many scams. Same number telling me about my car insurance for like 10 days in a row. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah. The level of assurances will always price out the low value for the exact same reason that you don't drive an armored personnel carrier to the street, down the street to get a pack of cigarettes. Like, it's a brilliant analogy. You are getting an unbelievable level of security that A, sometimes you do not want, B, you certainly do not need, and if there is a scarcity related to how many people can get that security at any one time, it is absolutely 100% going to price out anyone who is just getting a packet of cigarettes, who is just walking to work, who is just buying groceries, etc. And he talks about, like, I like that he actually defines, I love the money for enemies quote, that's just such an interesting concept that I think people miss. Exactly how much, like if I have a relationship or I'm working with a business that I trust and that I know, then using an insanely secure money for enemies transaction is not something that's needed at all. It's like going to hang out with my friends and like decking myself out in body armor and bringing a gun when I'm just going to their house as if I need to be protected from them. You know, like I don't need to check to make sure that they don't have any weapons on them or that there are no knives nearby us in the kitchen. Like, I don't need any of that security. This is my friend. I know this person. That is not a situation. That's not, the trust is already there. And he says that Bitcoin works for large interjurisdictional money for enemies transactions where mutual trust is lacking and rapid settlement is desired. The level of trust that is mitigated with the Bitcoin system is not something that we need for common everyday transactions, because we do common everyday transactions typically with businesses, communities, and people that we already trust. That's why we're there doing business with them. So it makes sense to have something like a layered network like Lightning, where if that trust breaks down, which 99% of the time it probably won't, but if it does, that we can then refer to the Bitcoin system, we can refer to that settlement, that final uncontestable ownership layer, to take it to court, essentially, to take it to the Bitcoin court to be finalized as my ownership rather than theirs, because our relationship broke down for whatever reason. And so if mutual trust is present, if deferred settlement is perfectly okay or necessary to the transaction, or if the payment size is very small, you do not need a base layer Bitcoin transaction to pull that off. And the more of those we accommodate, the more that we try to design or alter the consensus rules in order to just fit as many arbitrary, low-value, don't-need-any-trust-in-the-first-place transactions on the base layer, it compromises the ability to secure tens of billions, hundreds of billions, or even trillions of dollars, which is the only way we are going to solve the central banking problem for the whole world. It is only if all of that value that central banks are manipulating and confiscating, if that amount of value can be assured, can be tightly locked in the safe that is the global Bitcoin network, only if it can have that level of security can it actually handle those transactions and solve those problems for the country's worth of populations that are suffering because of it. And that is the problem. That is the massive problem that needs to be solved. And the biggest problem of trust, the largest and most corrupt abuses of that trust, happen when people are moving trillions of dollars. It happens between countries that don't have clear rules, where they are constantly fighting each other as competitive monopolies rather than in a well-defined business environment with an ongoing relationship. And it is between countries and governments and their people that get abused and corrupted. That is where the massive trust problem is in society. The trust problem is not between me and the grocery store. It's between me and my government. It's between a Venezuelan and the Venezuelan government. It's between Venezuela and the United States. That is where trust is breaking down. That is where these systems are failing. And that is where the biggest $100 trillion problem needs to be solved. And if Bitcoin can do that, well, then I'm going to have to deal with the fact that I can't buy a packet of cigarettes with the thing. And that is not a problem for me, because I want to solve that other one, that other problem. Anyway, so this was just a really good article, and it really lays the groundwork for a lot of fun discussion later on. And I think it's important to hit the concept of economic throughput, because transactions per second is arbitrary. Another great way to just demonstrate it, and I'll link it in the show notes just so that you can have a example of it, or so you can go check it out, is how many confs, C-O-N-F-S for confirmations, .com, I believe it is. And it's just one of those things that just shows you what level of assurance are you getting with a confirmation, because all of these thousands of tokens and altcoins and all kinds of crap that are supposedly faster than Bitcoin cannot give the level of assurances. None of them even come close. They are all orders of magnitude away from the assurance that you get with a Bitcoin confirmation in the same amount of time. So even if you're looking at 100 confirmations, 1,000 confirmations on some of these other chains, yes, you might be looking at and waiting for your confirmation for 10 minutes, 15 minutes on Bitcoin, and you only have one. But that one transaction, that one confirmation, has vastly more assurance in its settlement, in your ownership of it, than anything that can compare to it right now. Nothing compares to it, really. And that's a really great way to demonstrate that. So I think that's another one that would go along really well with this if you were, you know, trying to go down that rabbit hole a little bit. All right, guys, we'll close this out here. I got to head to the Raleigh Bitcoin meetup. I'm not going to be late, but I'm going to have a hard time getting there early because traffic is going to be garbage. So thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to follow Nick Carter. That is NIC_CARTER on Twitter. I will link to all of his stuff. If you're not following him, then you fail. What are you doing in the Bitcoin space? What are you even doing here, man? Nick Carter's got great stuff. Got to read his blog and Medium page. All right, all that good shit in the show notes, and I will link to it in the Twitter post as well. Thank you guys so much. This is the Crypto Economy, where you are going to hear me read all of the best bit stuff in the Bitcoin space and talk about all of the amazing concepts, the ideas of the pioneers, the people who have been here, the cypherpunks who were building and designing these systems for 10, 20, 30 years before they came, before Bitcoin was finally in this space and really change the game. And then, of course, all of the social impact that this will have, how this is going to literally change the world, and all of the reasons why. So thank you so much for listening. I will be back here tomorrow with another episode. I am Guy Swan, your host, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. So stick with me. Don't forget to subscribe to the Crypto Economy podcast. And follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy. I love you all. Keep hodling for a better future. And until next time, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.